Are you like me? Are you tired of wearing uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under your sweater? You got to check out Collars & Co., the makers of the dress collar polo. So the shirts, they're four-way stretch, they're buttery soft polos, but with firm dress collars on them. So they give you the dress shirt look, but an extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them under your sweater, your blazer, or by themselves. They're great for the office. They're great for the golf course. They're great for a night out. Dan Orlovsky over at ESPN wears these. They look sharp. You don't want to wear shirts that you bought at a sporting goods store to work or out on a date. These shirts are exploding. The brand has gone viral on social media. They received a $1 million investment from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones on Shark Tank. It's because of those collars. They don't flop down. They don't spread out like a 1970s disco collar. They stay firm. They stay sharp all day. They're one less thing to worry about. If you're looking for a performance dress shirt or a polo that looks great all day, you got to check out collarsandco.com. Use the promo code VANITY for 15% off any purchase of $100 or more. Again, that's collarsandco, C-O-L-L-A-R-S, and co.com. Use the promo code VANITY, 15% off purchase of $100 or more. It's triple pre-roll time. When it comes to paying off debt, it can often feel like an uphill battle. High interest rates resulting in minimum monthly payments keeps you in an endless cycle of debt. Upstart can help you get ahead. It's the fast and easy way to pay off your debt with a personal loan all online. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/JRVP. That's upstart.com/JRVP. Don't forget to use our URL. Let them know Jeselnik sent you.
Yeah, forget about Rosenthal. Just Jeselnik. Yeah, Greg read it to you on my orders.
They don't care about me. But you know who does care about me? Freshly. Was so impressed with Freshly. Emeka, my wife, a professional cook, was impressed with Freshly. They've got over 30 delicious meals to choose from. Always delivered fresh, never frozen. Ready to heat and enjoy in just 3 minutes. Right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to Freshly.com/JRVP. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to Freshly.com/JRVP for $40 off your first two orders. And we're going to the three pre-roll. We're getting paid tonight. Let's make ED a thing of the past.
Let's finally end this thing.
Let's do it together. We've been talking about Roman for a long time. If you got a pipe, you'd fix it. So fix that pipe today. Fix that pipe.
I have a pipe that I didn't even know was broken.
Lay that pipe and go to GetRoman.com/JRVP. $15 off your first month. That's GetRoman.com/JRVP. $15 off your first month. Whew.
It's quick.
All right. We've got the Rosenthals coming up on this week's show. Seeing Anthony backstage. A dead body in a dinosaur and the best M&M socks ever. Coming up on episode 106 of the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
Just one more week until a very special rummy episode.
I don't know what's going on that Reddit board, but like right before the show, for some reason, my son Walker was asking Siri about JRVP. He was just saying JRVP into Siri on my iPad, and up came a Reddit post that said the Jeselnik and Rummy Vanity Project. So I don't know if like you're working on something on the side here, Anthony, or what's going on with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I figured who would be a better co-host for me? Like, who would just let me talk more? And it's definitely Rummy. Greg, you still have a place. You're going to produce. Erica, we're cutting you out.
Oh man,
I don't like your dog getting jealous about the very special Rummy episode coming up next week. That was Erica's dog barking. Yeah, next week it will be Rummy's 1 year anniversary of his coming to America. And so we decided to have Greg and Erica come to my place and let Rummy bark at them and growl at them and not trust them throughout the episode. So it'll be a regular episode, except we'll all be in person together and Rummy will be, I'm a problem. I'm sure it will be difficult, and I will do all the things I have to do to try to make it easy. Again, Rummy doesn't bite, but he does not care about the podcast. He will just tee off.
He's a big dude. He's a big dude, but we're getting used to seeing each other. That'll be different, though, being inside your apartment. But I've now seen you a handful of times, including this week. My parents were in town. I just said goodbye to them. They were here for a week. It was a lot, you know, just not used to all that sort of family contact. But it was really good. And I did realize how, like, closely they listen to JRVP, which is a little concerning. Like, they will listen to this show tomorrow morning at the airport or on the plane. And it does make me wonder about, like, all the dead baby stories we're doing and everything. But we got to see you.
Your parents have a sense of humor. Now when they come, like, they used to come a lot when you first had the kids. And now when they come, are they as helpful? Or is it more like they just want to kind of spend time and then do their own thing? You know, are they more independent now that they don't have to, like, change diapers and stuff?
No, they're very helpful, especially after not seeing them for like a year and a half. If anything, my dad's more helpful. I don't think he really knows how to interact with humans under like four or so. But now he's getting used to it. And they're embracing the time that they have left. We do. My dad just turned 80 last week. So it's like, how many, you know, you can't just count on them being able to take cross-country trips forever. Let's enjoy it. You made it a special 80th for my dad. You delivered. Justin delivered big time.
Was that his actual birthday?
No. His birthday was before he came out here. But, you know, it was kind of the celebration.
It's a big one.
Yeah, I've still been doing, as I've been saying every week, I keep on doing stand-up, doing shows one or two a night. I actually took most of this week off just to, like, give myself a break. I was getting a little burned out. Write some more jokes. But it's been getting better and better. It's been getting tighter. I've got a couple new jokes, slow but steady. I'm saying, I think I've got it like a solid 20 that can get bigger, but I'm looking forward to getting longer sets. But again, just doing 15, 20 minutes around town. And Greg's mom and dad came to see me at the Comedy Store with Greg. Was it Wednesday night?
Thursday.
I think
night,
they came Thursday night. Yeah, it was a fun show. Like, I came in, I'd come from another show earlier and had a few beers. I walk and I sit down next to Greg's dad, say hello, but they're watching a show. They're enjoying. Ron Funches is on stage doing great, and they're enjoying that. Talk to your mom for a second, talk to you. And then, like, they're comics performing who I haven't seen in a year and a half. I've seen your parents more than I've seen most of my friends. So I would run backstage and talk to them in between, and then got to go up and do a show. And it was not, like, a great... it was not a great set. Like, it was one of those, like, okay, like, this is how it's going to be, fine. But that happens.
Was it the crowd, or
you were giving the audience some shit? It was not a great crowd. Well, it's also, you know, half full because
it's half full. It's spread
they're
out.
Limiting the seats. And
yeah, it's in the main room Thursday night, and like, yeah, we weren't amazing. But I was also like, I would say I wasn't at my best, and I was definitely giving the crowd shit from the get go. I had just done a great show earlier that I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this. And if you and your parents hadn't been there, Greg, I would not have cared at all. But I was like, okay, I'm not gonna embarrass myself here. But they were not giving me. After my first joke, I was like, okay, this is going to be a slog, and people are watching me that I care about. But we're
plebes. Like, we don't notice the difference. Every comedian that night was kind of complaining that it was a dead crowd. But it was still like the good ones were good. It was. I don't want to. You know, we could always cut this out if you want. But whoever that like started the show.
Oh, that's a bullet that you take a bullet there. That's like an employee that goes up. I don't know
but
who it was.
He ate shit more than I've seen in like a professional place, like the Comedy Store. And Funchess, I think, was next and picked it right up and was doing good. But I just felt that set a bad tone.
I mean, that whoever has that spot always eats shit. Like, anyone who goes up there is just going to eat. They go up there just so the waiters can kind of do their thing, and they don't have to have a paid comic go up and eat it. But that's not even like an embarrassing thing to say about someone. I'm glad I don't know who it is, but I probably wouldn't know the name if you said it to me. But it was fun to like not only do a show, you know, see your parents, have them come and see me at the store, and then your dad seemed interested in the store, so I took him around. I was going to give him more of a tour, but I wanted him to see Marc Maron because your dad listens to Marc Maron's podcast and had heard Marc talk about me and me talk about Marc on the different podcasts and was like, oh, I want to see him. And I brought Greg, his mom and dad, into the original room, like walked him down and walked them into the back to watch Marc. But Marc was just finishing up, and all they got to see was Marc tell and I won't say what the joke is, but Mark just tell a joke about his girlfriend who had died during the pandemic. His girlfriend had like a blood disease that came up, and like within a week she was gone. And it was terribly tragic. It was horrible for Mark.
That's real? Oh, yeah.
She was a film director, like a famous person. And and we all like reached out to him about it, and he was upset. But now he's on stage, and like he has a joke about it that is like I thought was hilarious. But I heard your dad go oof, like he was excited to see Mark, and that's all he got to see was Mark tell that one joke, and then it was like peace out. Got to shake Mark's hand.
I enjoyed it. It was like a great joke. It was kind of a unique experience to see. I saw him do 2 minutes of comedy. I think we maybe saw the tail end of another joke, and you know I love those two. And then we got out. It was clean.
Yeah, it was perfect. I got to go home early. It has been fun. But then your dad sent me an email later on in the week that I thought was really funny. It was just like a nice email saying thank you, you know, for the, like I got the check. I mean, the Comedy Store got the check. When I sat down, they were like, is this your family? And I just said, basically, like treat them like my family. Give them whatever you would give my family, but don't think that I, you know, am related to these people. But they paid for all the drinks. I tipped the waitress and they were all very happy. But your dad sent me an email that was just like, thank you for bringing us to the store. It was great to see everything. And then at the end, I quoted this. I wrote this down. We enjoyed your gig, although the audience was a little subdued all evening. Like he was like making me feel better for not having a great set, that I was like, this is perfect. This is a perfect, not
Did
my dad.
Did gig piss you off? Say.
No. The gig, and like old people get a pass. When people say like your little shows, when you do your little skits, where do you do them?
I think I said bit jokes. To you once, and you were like, don't fucking say that again.
No, definitely bit I would have been okay with. If you if you said a skit or shtick is the one that
shtick
sends me.
Shtick is the one.
Shtick sends me off a cliff every time. But no, stand-up has been fun. And Erica, you have some news for me.
I was actually, you know, speaking of emails, I was getting a few, and my fucking girlfriend is pressing every button on the damn microwave right now. It's like, were you typing in a song? Or something? Jesus Christ.
I hope she's putting your dog in there.
Seriously? She's standing there with her mouth open now. I was getting a lot of emails to our listener email about Tim Dillon and his podcast and him sort of, you know, I mean, frankly, talking shit. Mm-hmm. Did you hear about that? How do you feel about that?
Okay, I heard about this. And like, listen, I don't really know Tim Dillon. I know who he is. I've heard of him. I didn't realize that he was in LA. I think we must run in different circles. I think he makes most of his money on the road and doing his podcast on Patreon. But I've certainly heard of him, and we have friends in common. Like, I know the guy, and from what I know about him, I don't dislike him, but just know there's no relationship there. But for the past 2 weeks, I guess he moved to Austin with a lot of the Rogan crew, people who went to Austin, and had come back to LA for like 2 weeks, and we were on a lot of shows together. Like a bunch of shows together. And he was a nice guy. Like I was like, I wonder what to expect. Is he going to be cocky? Is he going to be a jerk? Is he going to want to go up at a certain time? And he was just very nice in the green room, polite, didn't make a big deal or anything. I never really watched his set, but I had to bring him up a couple times. He bailed on a couple of shows here and there. Like and you, people cancel shows all the time, but it was fine. And we talked for maybe a couple minutes. And then I know he like leaves town. And I come home from, I guess I was doing my last bit of shows, and I see on Twitter someone's like, wow, like Tim Dillon just trashed Jeselnik, like awesome. And I'm like, well, he did, like on stage? Like what's going on? And I listened to like the first like 5 minutes of his latest podcast. And did you listen to it, Erica?
No, but someone transcribed it pretty much.
Yeah, and tell me if I'm saying this wrong, but I think that this is like what it was. He was like, he starts the podcast and he's explaining to fans who went to shows, because he would bail on shows and fans would get very upset because they paid to see him specifically and would be mad. And I was at a couple of those shows. So he starts the podcast explaining why when it's not his show, if he's not doing an hour, it's not as important to him. And sometimes he has to miss it for, you know, maybe he just goes to a restaurant. Maybe some friends call him up, whatever. But he's like, stand up in LA is not that fun. He's like, stand up in LA is sitting in a green room making small talk with Anthony Jeselnik. And Anthony Jeselnik is not a human being. I'd rather be talking to human beings, carbon life forms, I think he uses the phrase. and it was just awful having to make small talk with him, and then goes on to trash me for that article that I tweeted that he said threw his friends under the bus, which I will get into in a second. And I thought this was very funny. And I don't know, maybe he goes on later on in the podcast and comes back at me, but I just thought it was so funny for someone to be polite and nice and have ample opportunity to say anything to me that he wanted. Like, the small talk was like, how's the crowd? Like, all these outdoor shows are weird, huh? Like, very simple, like, I'm being polite because I don't know you and we're in a room together. Like, just the two of us or, like, one other person, that it would be awkward if I said nothing. But I don't know, like, Greg, back me up on this. Like, I'm not Johnny Smalltalk. Like, no one's like, God, hanging out with Justin, like, just a ton of small talk. Like, it's not my thing. I'm just, like, being polite. And he was being polite. So to hear him, like, go off like that, and if you've ever heard his podcast, he has a completely different voice. Like, I assume it's a character. I don't know if he does the same thing on stage, but it sounds almost like a Rush Limbaugh type, like, bombastic, like, everything is, it's like, it's very, he's an entertainer, and he's entertaining. So to hear him go from, like, yeah, the crowd was good, yeah, it's a little cold out, whatever, to this, like, screaming into the mic about how awful it is to make small talk with me. I honestly, people are like, are you mad? Is there a beef? There is no beef. I got to tell you, and maybe this causes beef, I am flattered. I am flattered that someone would not like me, be nice to my face all week, and then wait till they left the city to record a podcast talking about how awful it is to make small talk with me. And listen, I'm not the best person to be in a green room with. I'll admit that. Maybe if people have been like, you're not really like a normal human being, I'll take that as well. But I was flattered that he waited until he left. And I'll probably never see the guy again. So I do not care.
You probably
I thought
will.
It was funny.
Don't
we might run into each other. And listen, if we run into each other again, like, my friends were like, what? Because I have friends who he has gone after on his podcast before who've talked about it. Just been like, it's weird. This guy just, like, started yelling about me and his fans are tweeting at me. So I told my friends, I was like, yeah, I got Tim Dillon. You know, Tim Dillon talking about the podcast. And they were like, what are you going to do if you see him again? And I was like, oh, I'm for sure going back into the small talk. Like, I hope Tim wants to talk about the weather because that's what he's getting.
Crazy
like,
clouds.
I can't wait to do it. Yeah, like, how about this heat, Tim? Huh? Can you believe it? Has it rained in a while, Tim? Like, I just I don't care. I think it's funny.
But I hate that when your personality on
shtick.
Air is bombastic, to go that route is disappointing.
No, he's a free thinker. He's a Rogan
guy. I'd rather someone
be
chill backstage and be bombastic in their act than be bombastic all the time. I'll go with that. And, like, he did nothing that upset me all week at all. That I don't care. And what he said didn't bother me. Like, it's weird. We must have talked for 3 minutes total over, like, the 2 weeks we were in there. And it couldn't have been more banal. I thought it was very funny.
He sees you as, like, a good target, or, you know, like, someone that, you know, his fan base is gonna enjoy him punching at.
Sure, they seem to enjoy it. I'm sure there's overlap in our fans a little bit. That's fine, but he might have a point. Okay, because I talking about this article. And this, I've talked about this article a couple times on the podcast, that I tweeted out an article months and months ago. I mean, I don't know how long ago it was with the pandemic thing going on, but it was like February. It was a long time ago. Like, it seems like forever ago. And I go on a podcast like a week or so ago. This guy, like, whenever I do a podcast, everyone starts asking me. And sometimes I just forget that I don't like doing them that much, and I say yes. So I had done Bobby Lee's podcast, which was fun to do. And then, polarizing though, you look at the comments on Bobby Lee's podcast, people either into it or think I'm insane for just, like, staring at him the entire time. They're like, he didn't laugh at Bobby's jokes, he's being a jerk. It's like, I did my best. I like Bobby, but I did my best. But this guy, Jeremiah, a guy from the Comedy Store, was like, will you do my podcast? And I'm like, sure. You know, it's like, at this point, I'm like almost like doing him a favor. It's just a silly, weird, improvisey podcast. And I get there and he's like, hey man, I got a lot of, I take questions for the guest. And a lot of people asked to talk about Big J Okerson, who was mentioned in that article. He's like the one friend of mine who was in that article I tweeted, who was upset about it. And I haven't really talked to anyone about this at all. No one's really, I want to say cared's the wrong word, but like my friends aren't in that world and like don't understand it. So it was just like, there's been no talk. And I've had a friend be like, don't talk about this ever. Don't ever bring it up. You just tweeted it. You didn't make any comments. Like, don't say anything about it. It'll go away. It's fine. But he says, people have been asking about this. And I'm like, you know what? I can clear this up so easily. Like, this will be fine. This will be the perfect way to do it on this podcast. Go ahead and ask me the question. And my plan is, he asked me the question, and the rest of it is so just silly and stupid, except for this one part. And my plan is just to go, listen, I read an article about stand-up. I thought it was interesting. I tweeted it out. I didn't give it a lot of thought. I'm sorry I hurt my friend. He's upset. But like, it wasn't a vendetta. It wasn't a hit piece. Like, I don't really know the people involved. I just kind of liked the article and tweeted it out. But then I keep talking. I keep talking, and I keep talking about the people who were in the podcast, and I'm getting everything wrong. Like, after the fact, it got published like a couple days ago. And after the fact, like, I thought they had Alex Jones on the podcast. Alex Jones has never been on the podcast. I don't know why I thought that, but I was like sure of it. And I would like, I got people's names wrong, like totally wrong, that I was like, and I realized I truly do not know what I am talking about. So I walk back all of this. I regret tweeting this article out so much that I almost want to do it again just to like punish myself for doing it. That like I didn't reread the article. I didn't educate myself on the people in the article. I just started talking out of my ass. And people, I'll say this. I walk it back. I walk back everything I said after the first like two sentences, and I deserve every bit of hate I get from their fans. They can give it to me. I was wrong. I'm frankly embarrassed for saying things where I've not done the research. The Alex Jones thing is hilarious to me. And they did have Milo on, which is like Alex Jones light, I would think. But yeah, I was just so wrong in everything I said that I was like, God, I can't believe I said this so confidently. But if I just stuck to my plans, it would have been fine. But now that I've said what I just said about that article, I will never talk about it again. You can hate me if you want to. I have no problem with that. Sometimes, and Greg can back me up on this, I just talk without knowing what I am talking about.
Happens on this podcast quite a bit where you're telling a story that I was involved in. And I have such a bad memory. It's not like I'm going to disagree with you.
Yeah, this is not a good example.
I pretty much know that like he's getting all these facts wrong, but it doesn't matter for the sake of the story. I'm not gonna tell him. You know, Jeselnik lives in his world sometimes.
That's right. That's right. I do. And I enjoy the sound of my own voice. Maybe it's the pandemic. I've been lonely, so when I start talking to people, I overshare. But and my manager has always been like, you should get media training. Because you were so bad when you talk to a journalist and you just like keep on talking and dig yourself into these holes, that if you knew just to go on and promote what you're going to promote, you would be better at this. But as a comedian, I'm like, you know, I should be free to go ahead and say whatever I want. But I do everything stopping short of an apology, walking back.
You pretty much just did it. That was pretty good. I haven't heard anything quite like that. But I don't feel too bad about annoying
people can get mad. It's fine. There's no beef between me and Tim Dillon. Like, I truly think it's funny. And I don't know if he's like truly upset or just doing it for content. If I had to do three podcasts a week by myself, I would yell at all kinds of different people.
One thing I noticed at that show, by the way, was like, it made me think of you. There was a lot of comic complaining about cancel culture, which there were some there that were like not my cup of tea, but there were some like really good comics that I enjoyed most of their set and they were awesome at it, but there was still some of that complaining about cancel culture, which was like very repetitive when you're seeing like six or seven in a row.
I know. I mean, I don't like it. I'm on the record as I don't believe in cancel culture, and I don't know why people complain about it, but they do. So yeah, everyone knows where I stand on the old cancel culture. I don't know who you're talking about, who was doing it, but I haven't heard any specific bits. I've just heard comics constantly talking about it. That God damn it, Thor, keep it together. I'm not really mad at your dog, Erica. Don't worry. Yeah. a lot of comics complaining about cancel culture. I thought you were going to say they were complaining about the pandemic. I haven't heard a lot of comics do that, which is interesting. But yeah, people do, but most people that I, you know, pal around with do not. But yeah, I can imagine it being exhausting after one or two, especially when you're holding a microphone talking to people who paid to see you talking about being canceled. It always makes me laugh. I got to come up with a bit that, like, an anti cancel culture bit, but it annoys me so much that I wouldn't even want to talk about it from that aspect. You know, anytime someone says cancel culture, I just glaze over completely.
Right. I'm at the point, if you say cancel culture in any context or woke, like, that's a mark against you. Not even if you're using it pejoratively, like, you might be complaining about, like I guess I'm on the list too, because I just said it.
Yeah, but I get woke a lot. I get the insult woke a lot. And I was telling someone I didn't like it, and they thought I meant that I just, like, I was offended by being called woke. It's just like, whenever someone calls anyone the same insult all the time, it's like, remember Snowflake? Remember Snowflake was the big thing for it? It's like, that's not a good insult because everyone says it. You know what I mean? I understand what you're trying to say, that you're, like, this fragile person, but woke, I'm like, did you come up with that yourself? Is that a thing? It doesn't bother me. Listen, I read a lot of books, okay? I'm not elitist, I'm elite. And now it's time for, did we get any notes? Didn't even check this week. I got all my notes.
It's like seven straight weeks we haven't gotten a note. At some point, you know.
You know why we do it, Greg. You know why we do it. And this was your idea, I'll remind you, back in the day, to have, did we get any notes? That's a lie. Yeah. You just shook your head. Yes, you have no idea. It's mine. It's my thing. I like to do. One day we'll get a note, and then I'll get to talk about it there. But I'm going to keep it there. And now it's time for a place where we always get notes. And it was never Greg's idea. It's Erica's Corner. No, that's fucking challenge music. Okay,
you're that so into hyped it.
Up. That makes me feel like I'm about to do the challenge. Like, we're about to have a hall brawl, which only my challenge heads get.
If I was gonna watch the challenge, should I start at season one?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. It's way different early in the season. I would tell you to either watch season 30, which I really, they've done so many, or the latest season that just ended a couple weeks ago. I don't know, it may be 36 or something, but 30 was amazing. And the newest one was the one that I really liked. But I tell you, the newest one that I liked, I really enjoyed watching it and then reading the Ringer breakdown of the episode. It made it so much funnier to me.
Is this a PR campaign? Are you trying to get on, like, the celebrity challenge, like every show?
No, it's funny. There's a challenge now. I know this is your corner. It's not your corner yet. This is still my time. Okay. There's a season right now going on called the Challenge All Stars, where it's people who used to be on way back in the day, but now they're fucking old as hell, and they all showed up thinking that it would be, like, easier games, and they're not easy at all. Like, the first episode, motherfuckers almost drown, and I was laughing so hard watching it. That season's almost over, but yeah, they have an old one. I don't know if I would do it. I don't know. I think it would be funny, and there are times where I'm like, here's where I would shine, but the competitions are brutal. And there are some that, like, this might be fun, and there's some that, like, this would be the worst thing ever. And when they're just sitting there sweating out in the hot sun after running a mile and trying to do a puzzle that's impossible, like, I'm just like, I would have a meltdown. And people do have meltdowns, which is why it's so fun. But yeah, Greg, I would start with either this new one or 30.
Okay.
Season 30 was fantastic. Was fantastic. But now, it's time for Erica's Corner. Erica Tamposi, our producer, she answers our hate mail, the emails we get asking about how I get along with any comedian in the world, and gets our viewer email. Again, viewer email, we're going to be doing an email show in a month or so coming up soon. So send in your questions now, send in your comments now, and we will get to those. We might do an audio component. Maybe I've talked about that already. If yeah. Erica figures out.
I think
how that
just
works.
Email us,
or you can
voice
ask
memos.
Us the question, send us the file, and we'll let you talk on the podcast.
Yeah. This question
email
this
voice
week,
memos? If you can do such a thing. Okay.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. JRVP, Junior Vice President at gmail.com. Okay. William asks, with Erica being such an integral part of
Let me finish your introduction. I was still doing your...
Oh, that's so nice. Keep going.
But Erica Tamposi is our producer. We love her. She has her own podcast called The Broadcast with her friend Emma. So we like to let her carve out a section of the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project. JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
And let her just do a little bit of her own magic, you know? Let her either ask us a question, which is 99% of the time what's going to happen, a game, which happens a couple times every 20 episodes, and people seem to love it way more than the questions, but still it's questions mostly. And then sometimes she does something wacky that we don't know at all. But what do you got for us this week?
Yeah, this week's actually something different. It's a fan question, and this is from William. And he says, with Erica being such an integral part of the podcast at this point, would Greg and Anthony consider ever adding Erica to the name of the podcast, i.e. the Jeselnik, Rosenthal, and Tamposi Vanity Project?
Let me stop you right there. Let's answer these question by question. No. No, we would not. There's money involved here. Erica's a producer. As far as producers go, we let her do way more than most producers get to do. But she still gets paid like a producer. And if it ever came the time where she was like, hey, I should have my picture on there and make, you know, we should split the money three ways, that's going to be a problem.
What if there's no money? What if it's just like, oh, Erica's cool too, if she's here?
I mean, we talk about you. You know, we let you talk every episode. You get a whole corner. You know, and whenever people complain about you, I have your back.
That's always. Very true.
What's the name of this emailer again?
William.
William. Like, define integral for me, William.
Ooh, integral. That's harsh. I mean, Greg.
You know, William's like, you know, how email works. That like, William's not going to be like, well, Greg, integral.
Well,
I just think means
listening.
That she's
listening. He's listening.
People are fans, and I think Erica engages with our fan base in a way that Greg and I do not. That people really enjoy her. And again, my pushback whenever anyone's complained about Erica is that we need her just for me to be mean to. Like that, I like having a girl in her 20s who I love but can annoy me. In a 42-year-old man way, that I think our fights are always pure and never cross the line. But I like that. I like that friction. But will she ever have her name in it? Like, listen, if Erica after this season says, listen, guys, I got another gig. I got to go. I can't do this anymore. JRVP is still going into the next season. Like, Greg and I have a contract. Erica's a free agent. She can do whatever she wants. So it would be a bad business move. It might be like an artistic move that the fans would enjoy. But a bad business move across the board. In fact, I've even thought, I had a friend ask me to start another podcast with him. And I said no. Because I thought it might take away from this. I was like, I want to pour all my energy into this podcast. Erica's got a couple. You know, Erica's got a bunch of fires going that we like to keep her on the outside. She is an integral part, but no one's tuning in to hear anyone except for me. Okay?
That's very true.
Come on. I got the name in there. We got some around the NFL listeners who came on over. I know Coach T's out there, by the way, just waiting for us to call him out of the bullpen.
Coach C's waiting in the lobby right now. He can't wait.
If we
he doesn't need his name in there.
The Jeselnik and Rosenthal and Coach T Vanity Project. That would be different. JRCTVP.
Mm-hmm. We love Erica. We appreciate Erica. We pay Erica, but we will not be putting her name into the Jeselnik and Rummy Vanity Project.
William's second question is for Anthony. It's always been a dream of mine to do stand-up, but I've been to some shows where the venue is needlessly cheesy and the comedians are treated like clowns. I'm worried if I started doing comedy, I would be forced to do shows like that, and I'm just too prideful. Anthony has so much integrity, so I wonder if there's any way to get into comedy without subjecting yourself to that kind of treatment and those kinds of shows?
Okay, this is a thoughtful question. I'll do my best to answer every aspect of it. If pride is your thing, do not start doing stand-up comedy.
Right.
Like, Greg was there from like day one. Greg was an OG and saw me in some humiliating moments as a stand-up. Just like things you have to go through. Luckily, I was 23 years old and I could handle it. I could handle the embarrassment and let it kind of wash off me and forget about it. But if you think you can go, and even now. Listen, 42-year-old Anthony, I get myself in some situations on stage where I'm like, God damn, this is embarrassing, and I'm just going to do this and get on with it. But I understand what you mean by treated like clowns. I never wanted to be a stand-up when I was a kid because I thought of it as the guy wearing the Hawaiian shirt with the bad haircut that he gets on purpose because he can make fun of the Hawaiian shirt and the haircut. Like, I never wanted to be that. So I think you can use that. Like, it helps to be the different guy on the show or the different girl on the show when there's 10 comics and they're all kind of acting like clowns. You can kind of be the opposite. So I wouldn't let that deter you, but you have to go through it. I would say, like, use that fear of being a clown and demeaning yourself and put that into your stage presence. But there is no way around it. And the business is filled with clowns. Try to find maybe a show that has your people. You know, that was kind of the good thing about being in L.A. is there was a show at this place called the M Bar called Comedy Death Ray, eventually Comedy Bang Bang, that had people from, like, Mr. Show and, excuse me, comics that I really respected and liked and wanted to be like. And or going to Largo and seeing Sarah Silverman or Zach Galifianakis, comics that I looked up to and thought were cool and wanted to be like. Like, that really helped to have someone like that in a scene. And if you're in a place, if you're in a city where there is no one like that, then you've got to try to be that person. And you have to be careful because that person can be very grating. There's a lot of wannabe me's in open mics around the country, and I assume they're not as well-liked as they would like to be. So be careful. You're not trying to be too big for your britches, but don't let it keep you away from comedy. Try to do it your way and just... It's important to look at what you like and take from it. It's also important to look at what you don't like and avoid. So I think it shouldn't stop you from doing comedy, but you are going to have to eat a lot of confetti-flavored shit, if you will. There's going to be a lot of, like, pouring water into a bucket, throwing it on you, and it's actually confetti and not water. It's a clown show. That's what you're signing up for.
I feel like it's one of those careers or jobs that you have to do it or else... It doesn't make sense to do it. Like, you ultimately almost have no choice but to do it and to give this thing a shot, or else you're not going to be in it to win it enough. Because otherwise, like, because of what you said, you're gonna have to go through the shit for a while. So you better have that inside you that you almost have no choice but to do it.
And every comic has gone through it. Like, your favorites, the person you think is, like, the coolest person in the world's gone through it. I remember years ago, I was talking to a friend and she was crying after a show. And I'm like, why are you crying? And she's like, I just bombed in front of my parents. And I just started laughing right in her face. And I was like, you are not a comedian until you have eaten shit in front of your parents. Until you have bombed in front of people that you do not want to bomb in front of. Like, that is just part of the gig. And as a comic, you kind of earn points by having bad shows, by being in embarrassing situations, by being like, listen to this show where I got paid in hot dogs and had to just get yelled at by a birthday party. Like, that is the gig. And you hope you can get through that. But it's good that you know, don't want that going in, but it is something you will have to deal with. So saying you have too much integrity for the bad parts of stand-up comedy, like, you've got 2 years ahead of you that are all bad parts of stand-up comedy where you can have no integrity. Even the wins you get in those first 2 years are humiliating wins. Humiliating. But it pays off if you can keep your head down and keep going. And then there's some people who do it forever, and it never works out for them. So, you know, do what you're going to do. But yeah, there's no way around the clown show humiliation. Even I had to go through it and still occasionally have to go through it. I mean, I was on a fucking podcast the other night with the other guys wearing a pink wig, making me break up with them in an improv game. Like, that's what I had to do.
I mean, some people love that shit. Yeah.
I know. I know. But I'm famously against it. And I let it be known. But yeah, you're going to have to do things that are weird all the time. All the time. And that was Erica's Corner. Shine on. You crazy diamond. You're not getting any credit. Now it's time for something that we could call Erica's Corner, but Erica likes to call it
ad copy.
I'm excited to talk a little Freshly again. It's been a few weeks.
Freshly was dope.
Freshly was one of the best sponsors we've ever had because they delivered that food to our house. All three of us ate it fast. I froze it. That was a mistake, but it's a good backup plan if for some reason you go out of town suddenly when Freshly sends you their food. You put them in the freezer, you come back. I'm telling you, it was way better than most.
I ate when I got my food. Freshly, I ate nothing but Freshly until the Freshly was gone.
Right.
You know what I mean? I wasn't like, oh, I need some cereal now. I was like, well, what's the next Freshly?
I think that's the way to go. And it's like they have these other food services where it's like, ooh, you can like pretend you're a cook. We'll give you the ingredients and you'll have to cook it yourself. No, fuck that. If you're doing that, you already are bad at cooking. So Freshly will just cook it for you. You just put it in your pan and that's fine. That's
enough. Let me tell you this too. A lot of these services like Blue Apron and stuff like that, I don't know if we're supposed to mention competitors, but it's like, you'd be like, oh, that sounds great, but it's for two people. If you're like me and you live alone, Freshly is the way to go. Because each Freshly meal is just for a single serving, that it's great. You don't feel lonely when you're eating Freshly. You feel like you're your own family sitting around the table. Put two of them in the microwave and have a conversation.
It's also cheap, too. You know, that's a factor. $6.16 per meal. And it's healthy. Like we said, it's fresh food. You can choose between 30 different options. Visit Freshly.com. You got the steak peppercorn. You got the sausage baked penne. You got chicken pesto bowl. They've got some meatless stuff, too. So they've got everything. And you just put it in the microwave. It's heated in 3 minutes, and you are good to go. Right now, Freshly's offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to Freshly.com/JRVP. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to Freshly.com/JRVP for $40 off your first two orders. That's Freshly.com/JRVP for $40 off your first two orders. That leads us.
I'm going to say one more thing about Freshly. We've been in a pandemic. Everyone's been eating unhealthy. It's been rough. We've been getting a lot of takeout, a lot of like bad meals. You want to get back on track? Freshly will get you back on track. It's just a dinner thing. So you can go have lunch with your friends. You can eat whatever you want for breakfast. But these dinners, I'm telling you, they are healthy. They taste healthy in a good way. Not in like a, not enough ingredients, but in like a, this was made to be healthy. Get yourself back from the pandemic, nutrition-wise, with Freshly.
Love that. I mean, speaking of getting yourself back on track, how about our friends at Upstart? They can get you back on track when it comes to your credit. If you are the type of person that dreads looking at your credit card statement every month, like, we don't blame you. It's a lot of weight. Upstart can lift that weight off your shoulders so you can finally feel free and feel the relief of getting rid of that credit card debt. It's a fast and easy way to pay it off with a personal loan all online. Unlike other lenders, Upstart looks at more than just your credit score, like your income and employment history. Credit score, what a Ponzi scheme credit score is.
It's a scam.
No other countries even have credit score, but that's beside the point. They're just looking for ways to take your money, and it's good to have someone like Upstart on your side who's helping you out and can give you a loan and hook you up. With a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate upfront for loans between $1,000 to $50,000. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payment today. Go to upstart.com/JRVP. That's upstart.com/JRVP. Don't forget to use our URL. Let them know we sent you. Like, show up to Upstart. Say, Jesselnik sent me. Give me my loan. I'm ready to go.
Do they have like brick and mortar stores, Upstart?
No, I don't think so. I guess you could just like send in, you know, you'll be saying it by using that upstart.com/JRVP. But you could always just send them an email and, you know, just be like, hey, Jesselnik sent me.
Get someone from customer service on the line. Tell them what's up.
All right. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, certain other information you provided in the loan application. Go to upstart.com/JRVP.
And that was
ad copy.
And now it's time for everybody's favorite game.
What Would Anthony Do? Starring Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd.
You've got it down now. It's almost like a video recording. Erica,
I like that it alters. It goes up and down. You know what I mean? It's different. It's different regions of England that she's in, and I'm here for it. You know, I like a little variety.
So, as excited as I am about the headlines this week, I am excited for Anthony to tell me what he would do in this situation. Every week I just give him, you know, a little slice of my life and see how Jesselnik would handle it. And this week was an interesting one. First time this has happened with either of my kids. And this was with my 6-year-old Walker. He came home and he told the parents, really Emeka, he felt more comfortable with, that he's got a crush. That he's got a crush on someone at school. Him and his friend, they both have these crushes. Sounds like the crush is reciprocated back. She said some nice things about Walker. What would Anthony do in this situation, you know, with your progeny first encountering love?
This is an interesting one, because if this was Ellis who told you she had a crush, a whole different ball game.
Why? Daughter, why should it be? I mean, she's older.
Daughter's got a crush. You gotta protect. You know what I mean? I'm getting aggro. I'm taking one of my axes from my desk and I'm stalking around a little bit. I want to know more information. You know, I'd be very curious as to who this crush is. You know, and it better not be a teacher. God help that teacher. If Ellis has a crush on a teacher. It better be someone her age or younger. But with Walker, he's kindergarten, right? Or is he in first grade now?
Yeah, he's kindergarten. So he's really just going to school for the first time ever in the last month. Yeah.
Very end of kindergarten. That means that like someone heard about what a crush is and started telling people in the class. And now they're all like, who's your crush? They pick someone.
Right.
It's good that he has that he has someone. I remember one of my first crushes. I remember this girl. Her name was Tara. And like I think this was in the second grade. And I had huge buck teeth. I had crazy buck teeth. When I was a little kid, because I knocked my two front teeth out very early on when I was still sucking my thumb. So, like, until I got braces
or
the Frankel, I fell off. I was pretending I was Batman with the babysitter, and I jumped off something and fell and hit, like, a wooden chest and knocked out my two front teeth when I was really little. It didn't even hurt, but it was just like, oh, now your adult teeth are coming in. You're still sucking your thumb. Big buck teeth. And I remember, like, I had a crush on her, and I was talking to her, and she was like, I told my mom about you. And I was like, fuck yeah. Like, this is like, I'm doing great. Like, what did you say? And she goes, I told her about your teeth. And I don't think I smiled without like my lips closed until I got braces again. Like that was a tough one. It was a tough one for the kid.
That sounds like the most formative, you know, moment of your entire childhood. That tells me a lot about you.
Listen, not even. I think about it once a day at most. You know what I mean? It's fine. It's fine. Where's Tara now? Okay. My teeth are doing all right. No, I think you got to be careful with the crush in school, and that you don't want to show like too much interest. You don't want to seem like it's too big a deal. You want to ask a question, maybe two, and then like, how does she feel about it? And then be like, that's interesting, but don't put any pressure on him to try to like seal the deal. You know, don't be like, don't try to invite her and her parents over for dinner. You know what I mean? I'm like,
what are you expecting here? He's 6 years old here.
I know, but like, have a play date, like go to a movie, none of that. Like, no. Just to think like, this is going to be conversations in class. Always be nice and be aware enough that if something goes wrong, you know, if she chooses someone else and he gets upset, make sure you talk to him about that. You can't have that anger coming up in class where he's like being mean to her. Because there is like the thing where like the guy who's like pulling on the girl's ponytail is the guy who has the crush on the girl. You know what I mean? You don't want him to be doing that. Have him be nice and sweet. And if he's like, this didn't work out, let him know there will be more crushes. The crushes are fun, but they're ultimately not important. But your first crush, like show enough interest that you're not like... that you're not trying to talk him out of it, but not too much interest that he feels pressure that this is like an important thing, you know? Like if you're like parents who are like, who's your girlfriend? Who's your boyfriend? Like, I think that's a shitty thing to do to a kid. Even like asking like, who are all your friends? Like, don't put them under that pressure. Just ask enough questions that they feel like they're being heard, but not that they're not embarrassed about it, but not enough that they feel like they have to come to dinner every night with like a new story about what happened or how this is progressing, which I'm sure you've done. Greg, I'm sure you handled it perfectly.
What I did. I pretty much followed exactly what you say. I am amazed. Like, my mom was the latest to say what good advice you give, you know, when it comes to parenting. Like, people really love your parenting advice. My favorite thing about this, though, is that he wanted to keep it from Ellis. And he did, his sister. Like, that was who he was embarrassed to. And yeah, we've treaded lightly. But I did notice, before he had told us this, kind of as a primer that this was coming, he did come out of school one day with like a little extra swag in his walk, and he told me how this one girl had told her whole table of friends how smart Walker was. And I was like, yeah, feel good about that. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Don't let the highs get you too high. Don't let the lows get you too low. You know what I mean? Like, if a girl's like, Walker, you know, he's not that bright, actually. Like, don't let that hurt his feelings. But I'm glad that he's getting out there and meeting the ladies. That's good. But I think you handled it perfectly. But listen, as soon as Ellis has a crush, we're gonna have a WWAD episode.
No, that's where you don't want to be a weirdo. You want to be even more, you know.
But you want to be tactical. Like, you don't listen. You don't want to be crazy. You don't want to be intimidating. But this is a whole nother ball game when Ellis starts getting crushes.
I think intimidating is kind of out of the game plan for me.
For you, maybe, but not for me. That's where I shine as the Godfather. is being intimidating. But you just, I don't know, like Ellis having a crush worries me. You know, Walker having a crush, cool. Ellis having a crush is just terrifying. I think it's a daughter son thing. It's not a boy girl thing. It's a daughter son thing that you got to protect your daughter, your son. You send out there. Like, listen, would you send Walker to Tulane? If Walker got into Tulane, would you send him there?
No, I mean not. I wouldn't send either of them there unless it was paid for. Sorry.
Let's say Walker is paid for.
Yeah, I guess.
And they have a program that he really wants to do. He wants to follow in your footsteps. He loves his stories about Tulane. He wants to go.
Sure.
Ellis, they're going to pay you $1 million to let her go there. Everything's free. Would you let your daughter spend 4 years at Tulane?
Yeah, if I would let her. I'm not into it either way. But yeah, I would let her. I would put my trust in her.
Okay. I mean, we're going to revisit this. I just think I think it's a much more interesting question when it's the daughter versus the son, especially what I know about Ellis and what I know about Walker. But when she has a crush, I can't wait to find out. I'm going to want information, and I'm going to talk to this guy or this girl.
Well, I'm sure she'll love that I discussed it on the podcast. I'm sure that'll be a big hit with her.
She won't know. She won't care, and I think she'll probably take my advice because she knows that the advice I give on What Would Anthony Do, starring Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd, is top-notch. And I think we overlap a lot. And that was.
What Would Anthony Do, starring Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd?
I wasn't quite British, but I'll take it. Let's get the headlines.
All right,
this first one, I mean, we got a couple Jeselnik specials and a Rosenthal special in this one. This first one I sent to Erica as soon as I saw it late one night. Greg, did you see this story during the week?
I did not, and I did not know this was a Jeselnik special, but it makes sense. Starting the news off with one of those classic mistaken identity stories. In this case, a police officer searching for drugs in a man's car mistook the grieving father's ashes of his 2-year-old daughter and scattered them on the ground. Whoopsie!
I mean, this is brutal. Brutal. I read a little bit of this. Tell me if I'm wrong about anything. The girl died in the care. The guy was, I don't know if he was married, ex-wife, ex-girlfriend, had a kid with her. The 2-year-old died in her care. Like, they were split up. And I think that either the mom was neglectful or there was an accident where she died. And do you know how long ago she died?
Well, it was a 2-year-old daughter. I don't know how long, but I know it was long enough ago that his ex-girlfriend and her boyfriend at the time are both in prison for murder, for neglecting the child.
Like, I think it was a while ago. Like, at least, like, long enough that the fact that he had them in his car, he wasn't taking them somewhere.
I think it was years. Yeah, it was years ago. He kept it with him.
He kept them in the car because he was so heartbroken and crushed about his child, as you would be. So for the cops to stop you, and I don't know if he was, like, swerving or if it was just a random stop or what the deal was, why they thought they had to search for drugs. But to pull out, like, you would just be hoping, like, there was an episode of The Wire where they pull over the wrong guy. They pull over a pastor thinking he's got drugs, and they, like, throw his Bible on the ground and dump, like, a bag of clothes out and all these things where you're like, he's just digging himself a deeper and deeper hole. There's no worse thing other than shooting the wrong person, which I hear happens occasionally in this country, than dumping out your 2-year-old daughter's ashes onto the street claiming they're drugs. And the guy is like, that's my daughter. Like, that's my, he's so heartbroken. He's complying completely across the board. I got to imagine people got fired for this. And how do you even clean it up? Like, it is just the most, like, punch to the gut you could possibly have, that I was thrilled to talk about it. Like, what am I missing? What information am I missing? Is this just a,
They thought it was meth that they said. They were full of shit too. They told him that it tested positive for meth, and they were just totally lying out of their ass. And he was like, "No, that's my daughter." And you know, they should have known. Everyone knows, like, the best way to tell if it's ashes or meth is just, like, snort it. Like, you can tell the difference.
Listen, I don't know much about meth, but I know that meth heads don't keep it in an urn. They do not keep it in, like, a ceremonial thing in their car. It's in a little plastic bag. But to like open it up and like and test like and like dip a finger in whatever
taste like, okay, and they just like they dump just dumped it out. That's terrible.
Dumped it right out is insane. And I wonder how they cleaned it up. Like, how did he get his? Did he have to get on the ground and like use his hands to pick them up? I would assume like a Dustbuster situation where like you put it in the bag and then emptied the bag out. But it is just one of the most heartbreaking stories that we've ever covered on the podcast. That at this point talking, I'm not even sure it was a good idea.
Right, you're not even. You're the one that's supposed to like make the jokes here. I've been trying here.
The joke is on the cop. The joke's on the cop of like who had to go back and try to explain. Like, I blew it today. I thought it was meth. It was his daughter's ashes. Like, it's the worst case scenario for the police. Like, they had to take off their Blue Lives Matter pins that day after something like this.
They're getting sued. So that's what's happening now, and that's why it's in the news. And part of the case against them, and it seems like a pretty open and shut case, is there on the body cam footage, it catches like a little conversation between the two cops. And one of them says the phrase, "Yeah, well, we ended up testing the dead baby ashes." It just like sounds straight out of a Jeselnik thing. It doesn't really make sense in response to what the other guy said, but he said that, and so it's
totally those guys must have known they were so fucked immediately. Like, so like there's no like no jury in America is not going to send them. They're going to have to pay millions and millions of dollars, which again I think like wouldn't be worth it for what they had to go through over this. But just the idea of pulling someone over looking for drugs and not finding any drugs, okay, that's an embarrassment for a cop. I got to imagine you thought you had someone,
and he admitted he had weed, anything. And that was the thing. He had like a small amount of weed, and he was like, "Yeah, I have some weed." And then they like got all up in his business and went crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, listen, living in California, most states now, that's not even a drug. But even to go this far and to the embarrassment of like, oh, we thought this was weed. It was actually this. We thought it was coke. It was actually flour or sugar, which happens. But to have it be your 2-year-old daughter's ashes that are so dear to you that you keep them in your car with you while you drive is the biggest fuck up since Breonna Taylor. I'll go ahead and say that.
Real lighthearted first story here.
Erica's just like face over a hand over her face, like, but why are we doing this?
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. Number two is much lighter.
It's a bad day for police.
Ooh, yeah, a lot of bad days for the police lately. Bad day for Quintus Cephas, Lions wide receiver who was involved in quite a story. It was a headline that really made our list on the strength of its insanely long tweet headline from Black Sports
Before
Online.
You get into this, yeah, I'll tell you this. I looked at the headlines that Erica sent me, saw this one, saw how long it was, and then it had Lions wide receiver in it, and just put it on the list. Like, I do not know anything about the story other than it must be batshit for it to be more than one sentence long.
There's not much more than the
headline. It's
going to
be crazy.
Yeah.
You know it's going to be crazy if I choose it and there's not a dead 2-year-old's ashes involved. You know it.
So here is the headline. I'm just going to read it verbatim, or the tweet from Black Sports Online. How IG model Emily Huff allegedly broke into her own house that she was being evicted from and tried to frame Lions wide receiver Quintus Cephas as the robber because he broke up with her for allegedly selling sex to wide receivers who had more catches than him. That's
okay,
the
this
headline.
Is great. This is not a letdown at all. I love this headline. He broke up with her. Let's start. Let's go from the
we
back.
We
got to
break this
and
down.
Then move to the front. Okay. They were in a relationship, and she decided that she was going to cheat on him by selling her body, but only to wide receivers who had more catches than he did. I mean, that is the ultimate betrayal. That would be like if I was dating someone and they were like, oh, I'm just going to bone any comedian who does better than you on this show is like the worst way to go. That, like, of course, that's good. That's going to, you think you break up with someone for something like that and the relationship's over. She must know what she did is wrong. He's happy that she's gone. But then she's mad. She's jealous that he moved on.
I mean, in her
she
defense, he only had like 20
body to other.
He only
receivers.
Had 20 catches last year. So that's like a pretty low number. And he was a rookie. So there's a lot of receivers with more catches than him. A lot to choose from.
Is there a chance she was just selling her body to any football player and everyone had more catches than him? Where she said, I'm selling my body to these people because they have more catches than you.
I mean, everyone had more catches than him, just about. And I think he was just more upset, less about who she was, you know, selling her body to as much as she was selling her body. And it appears that is where he ended the relationship.
Yeah, I mean, even cheating, like professional athletes, their girlfriends cheating or their wives cheating on someone on the same team is always like, it happens, but it's always brutal. But to be selling your body, that like the fact that like she, it was prostitution straight up, that your teammate like disrespects you enough to pay for sex with your girlfriend. Yeah. And she's getting, I don't know how much she was offering. Like, I think it would have been easy just to cheat, much less be like, talk them out of money.
But that's the minor part of the story. To me, I mean, the crazy part of the story, like if we're gonna break it down into the second time, she's upset that he blocked her and he just like cut off communication with her. And so her next move was she broke into her own house, and then she accused him of breaking into the house and stealing shit. But apparently she's like tried this before with other guys and got called out for it, like that's her move.
I love it. I mean, did she just like leave a Lions jersey like on the floor? Did she like wear like a helmet and shoulder pads and just jump through the window with cameras on her?
Like, I don't know.
It's like, how did she go about framing, or she just break a window and say Quintez did this?
She put this big long like IG post saying like stuff was missing. My you know, I had to break into the house. You know, here's how I climbed in. And then like one of her friends or one of her exes or something was like, no, you've been evicted 3 times this month. Like, you can't pay your rent. Like, this is all just like a bunch of bullshit. And then she went dark.
I mean, I love the idea of getting caught cheating prostitution style with other people in your industry, which is the deal breaker. You think you're never gonna talk again, and then still being mad at him, like still thinking he's the bad guy that needs to be taken down a peg or two. And now he's got to deal with this story coming out. I love it. I love it all.
Quintus like, Cephas.
What are they saying at the NFL about this?
Nothing.
I haven't heard a lot of buzz. It's not really leading NFL total access right now.
Sure, but I would think former players are like in the green room before, talking off air are like, this is, I bet a lot of them have stories a lot like this. I think NFL players have dated some crazy, crazy women.
It's a tricky world out there. You got to navigate IG. It's a whole, you know, we're just a bunch of old people. We don't know what they're dealing with.
Listen, the second part of the story is the crazy part, but it's so much crazier because of why they broke up. Like, for her to think that she's got to get back at him after this is an all-time, crazy, crazy Ooh. Thing.
You know what I would just, love to, you know what I just thought was on the Lions last year, Erica?
Who?
Your favorite player, Danny Amendola. Who is quite a looker and has more catches than Quintus Cephas.
I'd pay for
that. I'm just trying to imagine a situation where I'm like, where I'm backstage and someone comes up and is like, hey, that's my boyfriend up there. I'll sleep with you for $200. I think you're funnier than him. Like, just how, like, did anyone ever take her up on it? Or was somebody like, hey, man, hey, Quintez, your girlfriend
said
you
this.
Know, has got some issues. You know, like
I did look
for
more information. It didn't seem like this had been totally thoroughly reported out, like who this was with the catches or whatever. You know, we're taking a lot of people at their word.
I believe it. I mean, this story is so crazy. I believe everyone. And Quintez Cephas is my new favorite non-stealer. I mean, for what he's been through, he's like the Nelson Mandela of the NFL. I love it. Now this next one is also a Jesselnik special, way more lighthearted than the first one. I like to have one of each, you know what I mean? A 2-year-old and then this one I saw and had to talk about it.
Oh yeah. It's about our old town. Jesselnik lived there for a little bit, New York City. I was there for a decade. It's a little tense this week because there's a wanted man on the loose after pulling off a daring robbery of the Times Square M&M store. This man pulled a knife on a security guard as he was robbing the store, all so he could escape with three pairs of socks with a total retail value of $18.
I didn't even know about the socks. I assumed he was trying to get money. But the fact that he was there for merchandise, that he was there for, like, I assumed he was just like trying to get some of those M&Ms. Because the M&M store, it is kind of held up as everything that's wrong with Times Square in New York. Like, when they talk about what Times Square used to be versus what it is now, like, the M&M store is kind of the most insane thing there. But it also has amazing shit. Like, someone gave me, like, peanut butter and jelly M&Ms once that you can only get at the M&M store, and they were phenomenal. Like, I would definitely go to the M&M store and spend some money. But the idea of holding up anyone at knife point in the year 2021 is insane. So to combine the two, to be like, listen, I'm hard up. I've got to get money. I've got to rob someone. All I've got's a knife. And then just going to Times Square where there are a million businesses. There are a million vendors. So many people have like cash. So many people are running around. And you walk into the M&M store and decide this is how you're going to get back on track is thoroughly hilarious. And the fact that he took socks and no M&Ms. Like, and he only got three pairs. Like, how big are those socks? Like, what? He pulled the knife from the security guard, not an employee. I don't know why he didn't try to get some M&Ms involved. Like, did they catch this guy?
No, he's on the loose. That's the thing. That the entire city is a little worried. Because if you're going to be stealing... First of all, those socks are pretty awesome, though. Like, those big M&M socks that you can just put on. Just like
I've never seen them, but I
feel like a million bucks. You just walk out of your house and you're like, you feel confident. You feel like your crush just said how smart you were. You know, when you put on those M&M socks,
I feel like it would just feel like you just stepped in chocolate. You know what I mean? Like, it would feel like you just like woke up on Easter and forgot to clean up stuff and just like stepped on chocolate eggs and they were all melted in your toes. That's how I think M&M socks would be. And also, I had no idea that the M&M store sold anything but M&Ms.
Oh, right. I mean, it's three floors.
I hope the sock thing isn't ruining your take on the M&M story. Like, give me whatever your take was before you knew about the socks.
No, I mean, my take was just this is crazy. And this is such a bad idea criminal wise. Like, what did he? What do you think was the best case scenario that he was going to get? Like, best case scenario, I would think you walk in.
I think that no one notices, right?
And the M&Ms from the commercial are real, and they fall in love with you, and they decide to give you money, or you get a job. But to steal socks, you can steal socks from the Gap. You can steal socks from a million different stores that would be probably easier to do. But to go to the M&M store and then get socks is great. Not a sweatshirt, not a t-shirt, not shoes. I'm sure they got all that stuff. Not any kind of chocolate, not any kind of thing that would be resellable, but socks. You could have stolen socks from anywhere. You probably didn't even need the knife. I bet the security guard was so shocked that a guy pulled a knife on him in the M&M store. Like, what does the security guard there do? He probably just spends all day trying to get people from eating the M&Ms before they pay for them. I bet that's his entire job.
People must steal some real shit there, though. You're right. The knife move is like very 90s action movie. Mm-hmm. Guys stealing with a knife.
Yeah, I hope they catch this guy and let him go. Just be like, what were you thinking? Like, were you an employee of the M&M store and you knew something and something went wrong? Or did you just like really need socks?
Maybe he's in it for the thrill of it. He's just in it just to feel alive. He might
hate M&Ms. He might be a Reese's Pieces guy and decided to take them down a peg or two. Make it look like Quintez Cephas robbed them.
I'm an M&Ms guy. I mean a Reese's guy. There's a Hershey store
right next to it, though.
I remember being in the M&M store. Yeah. Erica's right. I think it's three stories. And I have a very distinct memory because that was where I was with Emeka and her parents. They were shopping there in 2008, like the day the financial crisis really hit the fan. Like, you know, the of 2000. I just remember like checking my phones and it's like the sky was falling in New York and like all the financial systems were collapsing and I was inside the M&M store.
So you guys heard the bad news and decided to make the pilgrimage to the M&M store to bow down. To be like, please, M&Ms, like, leave us some money. Don't take all our money.
It's just where we were at the M&Ms. Time. It's where we were.
I remember when I first had the peanut butter and jelly M&Ms, I was working on Jimmy Fallon. Someone gave me a couple, and I was like, I was like, that sounds gross. And then I ate like three. And I was like, I need to have more of these right now. And they're like, we're all out. Everyone's been eating them all day. You're the last one. You have to go to the M&M store. I remember, I think I actually went to the M&M store and there was a line out the door. And I said, there's no way I'm dealing with that. Like, it is a popular store, was at the time, but it just, it fascinates me. If someone, if you work at the M&M store in Times Square, email us. We will have you on the show. We will put your name in the title. You. And now it's time for
ad copy
part two.
Oh yeah. I'm looking forward to our first ever guest on the Jesselnick and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
Just like being some guy who's pretending that he works at the M&M store. You gotta provide proof if you're gonna make it. Just like Roman. And let's get to the ad, sorry.
Or you have to have a filter. Or you have to have a filter that makes you look like one of the M&Ms from the commercials. You know what I mean? If you had that, I would talk to you all day and believe everything you said.
You know who doesn't have ED? M&Ms. Who's that? Anyone that works at the M&M store. Or us, because we've been hooked up with Roman. We know all about Roman, and we're getting rid of ED. And if you're still just like kind of waiting around, being like, "Oh, it'll solve itself someday," it'll work itself out. This is embarrassing. No, you got to take care of it. You got to take care of it right now. It's not going to be magically fixed. Jesselnick is laughing right now because he knows.
I'm laughing.
I just went inside his mind.
Of someone with ED, been like, "Yeah, it'll be fine tomorrow." I'm like, it'll be fine when I wake up. I just bumped it on something.
You know what I'm talking about. Jesselnick, I feel like this is hitting close to home. It's just like, you know what I'm talking about, guys out there. It's just like, oh, yeah, like eventually this will just turn around. Nope. It's been a problem for a while, bro. You got to fix it. And this whole process with Roman.
You fix it right the first time. You know what I mean? You never have to go back to it again. You know?
It's straightforward. I mean, it's a medical issue. You wouldn't be worried about go getting your eye fixed. Or if you hurt your elbow, like, you'd go get that fixed. So go get this fixed. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. You just go to GetRoman.com/JRVP and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. I mean, I finally made Jesselnick laugh. That's worth something.
You kill me with the eye or the elbow. is that written down as
no,
the examples?
I mean, those are two major problems that people
you're
have.
You're like penis, eye, elbow. Like, as long as those three things are working, I'm a family man. I can do anything.
It could be like a, you know,
people hurt their elbow, they would wait 3 years before they went to a doctor.
If you break your elbow though, you gotta fix it.
You can still have sex with one eye and one arm.
If your eye is scratchy, you go fix it. If your ED is a problem, you go fix it. Go to GetRoman.com/JRVP now. You'll get $15 off your first month. It really is time to take care of your ED. And remember, get started today and you'll save $15 off your first order of ED treatment. Next up.
And while you're talking to Roman, ask them about your eye and your elbow. They might not be able to help you at all. It might just be ED, but just you know, be safe.
They're doctors. They're doctors and they're going to help. Speaking of help, BetterHelp, they're all about helping you through your problems. And it doesn't have to be like a mental health crisis. BetterHelp is not a crisis line.
Get there before it becomes a crisis. Get there. Everyone needs a little bit of help. Everyone needs to grease the wheels a little bit. Everyone needs a little metaphorical elbow work done. That go before it becomes a huge deal. You know what I mean? You feel like you need a good cry. We all need a good cry sometimes. BetterHelp. You know, BetterHelp there's no reason not to do it. There's no reason not to see a therapist. I'm 100% on the therapy bandwagon. BetterHelp is a way in for so many people who don't know how to start seeing a therapist. They have millions of different therapists. I'm exaggerating on that point, but any different kinds of therapists that you could want, any different problem that you can have, you cannot make up a problem that they cannot have someone to talk to you about. So anything, even if you're like, maybe this isn't like a big enough problem for a therapist, BetterHelp. If you're like, this is too big a problem for a therapist, BetterHelp. You can find out without leaving your home. Without leaving a computer, you can get on the phone and call them. You can send them a text. You can send them an email. It's just for anyone who has thought about therapy and keeps coming up with excuses, BetterHelp eliminates all of the excuses for anything you are going through, anything you think you might be going through. A friend is going through something. Talk to BetterHelp and find out what therapy can do for you. Greg, give them the call to action.
I want you to live a happier life today. I do. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/JRVP. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that is betterhelp, HELP.com/JRVP.
And that was...
ad copy.
Elbows and eyes can't lose.
Oh, boy.
Oh, it's the challenge. Jeselnik versus Rosenthal.
I would feel confident in a physical challenge and mental challenge against Jeselnik. I'm not.
They're not all physical, man. Sometimes you got to eat. Like, listen, it would be. If you and I were just on the challenge, we just got like transported onto it. Let's put Erica in there. The three of us are competing against each other. It's a total coin toss who wins. Like, there is no, like, I'm the better athlete. I'm smarter at puzzles. Like, it's a coin flip all the time, which is one of the things that makes the challenge so great.
I would be disappointed. If Erica beat me, I would be disappointed. But you never know. Yeah, or Anthony, for that matter. I'm not disappointed about this next story. It's amazing. It's about the Spanish police who are investigating the death of a 39-year-old man whose body was found last week inside of a dinosaur statue.
Was this a Jeselnik special too? Did I send this to you, Erica?
No,
but it's amazing. Like, that's right. There apparently was like a crack in the hollow leg of a paper mache stegosaurus statue somewhere near Barcelona. And the police noticed inside the hollow leg, which was cracked open just a bit, that there was a smelly corpse inside.
Yeah, there was someone complained about a smell. Now, when I first saw this headline,
smelly corpse.
When I first saw this headline, I assumed like a museum dinosaur. You know what I mean? Just the bones, and then someone like crawled into the rib cage to die. That I thought it would be a funny way. And even when I found it was a paper mache, like an art piece, that I thought if you were like, listen, you're going to die in 30 minutes. Where do you want to die? I'm getting inside that dinosaur. You know what I mean? That would be where I would go. That seemed like the fun way to do it. And then I saw that he actually died because he dropped his cell phone in there and then tried to get a cell phone and fell in.
What?
And was like upside down.
No.
Or whatever. That like he died. That's a bad way to die. When people die when they're just like hanging upside down or trapped in and they can't breathe anymore, they die that way. You've got like an hour, maybe two, to live. And you know you're going to die. No one's going to help you. And you know you did it over a cell phone. And you're going to be found in this dinosaur statue is a brutal, brutal way to go out. Still pretty funny that it's in the dinosaur statue. You know, it's more sad when, like, I remember the guy who was the Superman on the Hollywood Boulevard died trying to in a Salvation Army bin. He was trying to steal clothes to sell. And that's sad. You know what I mean? Dropping your cell phone, he's probably trying to take a picture. This will be funny. And then understands he's going to die inside this dinosaur. You got to laugh. Sometimes you got to laugh. I wonder if he was able to get the phone and be like, you're not going to believe this. You're not going to believe how I'm dying right now. Call me back.
You don't have to laugh. I mean, I think this is the worst death for the family that has to talk about it for the rest of their life that we've ever had on this podcast.
100%. Oh, I heard Jason passed away. What happened? Where did he lost his cell phone and fell? Where did he fall?
He dropped it inside the statue.
He fell into a dinosaur leg. And not he didn't get into the ribcage, no, into the leg. He died in the foot. He died Flintstone style.
Yeah. So he was like reaching inside the statue and then he fell over.
This is, I mean, a lesson to all of you, like, let it go. You lose your cell phone. I don't care if you just, like, dropped it on the sidewalk. Let it go. Do not crawl into anything. The idea of dying inside a paper mache dinosaur is not worth the $200. I don't know how much cell phones are now. Maybe it was, like, a really good one he just bought.
But a lot more than that. How do you not know? I mean,
he must have been interested. He must have been reaching in there trying to take a picture inside or maybe looking inside to see it. I would love to know more. There's no details about the story.
He was unable to call for help. They did say that. They say no foul play is suspected. I'm wondering. I mean, there is a dead man inside of a dinosaur. I'm just wondering if they're like using this cell phone story as a cover up. That's what I would like to think, because I do feel, because he's a relatively young man. He was younger than the two of us, Anthony, and he had a family. And I really am. They're not going to explain it. Like, there's no, if you're his kid, you are not going to explain it. You're just going to say like, yeah, dad died of cancer. There's no way you're bringing this story up over and over again.
No, you for sure bring it up, because then you make sure your kids don't do something like this. If your kids drop your cell phone, let it go. It's fine. It's not worth dying over. I thought when I first heard the story, I thought it was kind of like your dog is dying, so it like goes under the porch. You know what I mean? Like animals, when they go to die, they go somewhere. Like that, he was like, ah, "I got it. I'm losing it. I got to get inside this dinosaur," which is funny. but yeah, going in for the cell phone is not good. Although it would be like a good cell phone commercial. Like, wouldn't you get AppleCare if when you got your phone they were like, "It's $100 a year for AppleCare," but let me tell you about this guy who died in a papier-mâché dinosaur leg in Barcelona. Now you want it? Or you want to risk your life?
Think how pissed off like the guy who made this statue is, because they mm-hmm. they took it away the next day. That's gone yeah. forever.
Yeah, you got to get rid of it. It's a gots to go. I don't know what they put up in front of it. You know what they should do? Is they should build a statue of the guy who died, but in the position they found the body in.
So it's like you can see him like crawling inside the papier-mâché dinosaur. So it's almost like two statues in one. You can kind of like see him, and he's like holding his phone up, and maybe there's like a text from his wife that says "I love you," and something nice.
I would think it would look like he was so breakdancing, and like he was breakdancing in mid pose, but he's upside down. But then if you look on his phone, he's sending a text that's like, "I hate dinosaurs." Build him a statue. And make sure the legs are thin. Speaking of legs, this headline I think is just a classic. Like, this headline, we may have talked about this, but not this story, but this thing happening before on JFK.
We have. I think one other time we had something similar. It's another one from the Whoopsie File. An elderly
Erica,
man.
Erica, title for this podcast of the Whoopsie File.
Okay.
An elderly man in Australia woke up in the hospital this week to find that doctors had mistakenly amputated the wrong leg. Boing.
I mean, so he went in for a leg amputation.
Yeah.
And then he woke up with the wrong one gone.
Yeah.
That is like, that's almost worse, because sometimes people go in and it's like you go in for a certain procedure and they cut off your leg. And you're like, I was here to get my elbow fixed finally. Roman couldn't help me with the elbow. I was here to get my elbow fixed and you cut off my leg. This guy was ready, mentally prepared to lose a leg. And they took the other one. Because I mean, the next thing is like, okay, well, before you get too upset, we're going to put you under because we got to take the other leg too.
Right, and they didn't know until he woke up. That's the thing. Like, it took him saying, like, "Hey, man, wrong leg."
It was, and I mean, I wonder how long until he was sure. Because I think he would wake up and be like, "They must have done." Because in hospitals, don't they take a marker and mark the whatever they're amputating?
Yes, and that was the whole thing. Like, is yeah, they do mark it, and somehow a mistake happened where the doctor thought he saw the mark on the other leg, or an orderly marked the wrong leg. Well, whatever it was, you know, it was a mistake. The doctors and the surgeons who are on leave right now, like, are totally apologetic and saying all the right things. But like, what could you possibly say in this situation?
I would be mad that they're on leave. I'd be like, are you kidding? You sent them on vacation over this? I want them to sit around my hospital bed while I yell at them and they get me things all day long. And like, did they even try to spin it? Were they like, oh, we wanted to even it out?
They accepted
We wanted to do a test leg first and make sure. Like, why was he having the leg amputated?
He was elderly. That, I don't know why I shouldn't feel this way, but that made me feel somehow slightly better that, you know, I think he was in his 80s.
It's not your whole life. Your legless.
Yeah, and I don't know what it was. He needed an amputation, and he got the wrong one.
I mean, at least look, silver lining. This guy's got a story for the rest of his life. This guy will never buy a drink again. Everyone's buying him drinks. He gets drunk way quicker. You know, I bet the hospital hooks him up with sweet fake legs. Do you even use fake legs if you're 80, or would you just be wheelchair forever? Because if you're 80, the difference between one leg and no legs is not that big a deal.
Right, you know, that's, it's a fair point. I don't know if he's going fake wheelchair. Leg at 83 or whatever. He would have a wheelchair, but they should be giving him like fake legs plated in gold. I mean, he mm-hmm. owns this hospital now. They are going to rename this hospital for him. He can sue the fuck out of them.
Golden legs would be the worst fake legs you could possibly have for an 80-year-old man. I'd be like, yeah, I couldn't move around that well, but now I drag myself everywhere with my gold legs that are for sure getting stolen. The second I walk into an M&M store, who has to answer for this? Like, does everyone involved have to come into the room and stand around his bed and get yelled at?
There were like, a lot of statements. There were from the statement from the surgeon, from the hospital, from everyone. I think in the U.S. we have the culture where, yeah, there would just be lawsuits up the wazoo. Other countries aren't quite the same. Right.
But I would think they have malpractice insurance for things like this. Like, you cannot cut off the wrong leg and then walk away scot-free. He's getting, and again, he's 80. He doesn't need a lot, but he must be getting something. And I hope he could either have a great sense of humor about it or he'll be dead in 2 weeks from the depression. I would almost be kind of psyched to have this story, to be like, you're not going to fucking believe what happened to me. How was your pandemic? Oh, it was okay. I got a dog. Oh, yeah? You got a dog? I lost two legs in the pandemic and got made millions of dollars. And I got a dog. And the dog eats the legs. Like, what would you do, Greg?
I mean, I would have the best story at, like, I got to think, unless his kids are taking care of him, he's at the old folks home now. And it's like, I'm sure there's some, like, going around the room stories with different, like, problems that they have, like, struggles that they're going through. Like, he can top all of them.
I'd want to know the doctor's name, and I would talk about him all the time. I would get like a tattoo that was like, Dr. Johnson sucks. Dr. Johnson is, Dr. Johnson did this to me. Like a butcher knife with Dr. Johnson's name on it. Like, I would just, this must be all he talks about, all his friends talk about. And that doctor is leaving. He must be losing his job and going to a different hospital in a country where they do not speak the language they spoke in the country that he did this in.
Spain, because, yeah.
But yeah, a non-Spanish-speaking country, because this is going to travel. This is going to get out. Oh, you got Dr. Johnson? Oh, he's good, except for he cut off the guy's wrong leg and then had to cut off the other one too.
I like the idea of an elderly guy, though, who doesn't, you know, usually when you're older, you almost like let go of the things that matter, like try to be a little more joyful, enjoy the last time you have. But you have this guy just living the rest of his life in spite, just trying to fuck over Dr. Johnson, you know, turn.
He could go the other way, though, because I remember when I got my wisdom teeth taken out when I was 18 years old, 19 years old. I was in the chair and I'd never had a surgery before where they like put you under. And I'm on, they give me like a pill or whatever, and then they put the IV in, and they're having me count down, and they go, now we're just going to take your 4 wisdom teeth. And I start laughing, and I go, you can fucking take them all. And that's the last thing I remember. Like, I truly, at that moment, I would not have cared if I woke up with no teeth, because it felt so good to be on those drugs that he could have been like, eh, it's fine. What do I care? What's a leg? You know, this is okay. Just keep these drugs in my system forever. And now it's time for
choo-choo
recommendation station. Greg, we'll go to you first. We'll go around the horn.
Yeah, I'm going to start with a novel this week, because I can't recommend season 2 of Blown Away. But let me tell you, it lives up to season 1. You should watch that too. But the novel is called How Beautiful We Were by Imbolo Mabue. And the book came out 3 or 4 months ago. It's from a writer... from the perspective, I think she's American, but it's set in an African country, like in the 80s, as like a big corporation moves in, and basically the interactions between this corporation, who, you know, fucks up their water and everything, and the village. And it's one of those books that, like, I thought it was going in one certain way. That's like, you know, corporate greed you know, we're all living, you know, in like this post-capitalist society, and it's all evil and all this stuff. But it is like so well done, and such depth from like every possible character inside of the story. It's one of the best things I've read this year. It's definitely a challenging book, but like it would not surprise me at all if at the end of the year it is winning awards. It's on the top five New York Times stuff. And it's one that I've thought about a lot since I finished it. It's called How Beautiful We Were by Imbolo Mabue. And she is an amazing writer.
I'm going to write this down right now. How Beautiful We Were.
Yep. And I heard it because, you know, I heard some people pumping it up a little bit. I think, you know, I don't think it's too under the radar or anything. It's somewhat challenging, but it's fascinating. It's really good.
Cool. Erica, do you have anything this week?
I saw a movie in the theaters, but it's also on HBO Max. It's Those Who Wish Me Dead. It's directed by Taylor Sheridan, who did like Sicario and all that. It's like an action Angelina Jolie kind of stupid, bloody, like fun. It's weird to call it fun. It was just like one of those like fun, forget about, you know, what's going on for an hour and a half. And it was just like action, just sort of like a fun kind of thriller,
fun?
I guess. Yeah,
Say the name of the movie again.
Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Those Who Wish Me Dead. Okay, this is, okay, if you're a listener to the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project, JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
Then this is a historic recommendation station. I'm going to get to the historic part in a second. First of all, I just want to say I've been reading books like I normally do. I've been reading Greg's recommendations. I read The Wife. I've also been reading books that I'm just not going to recommend. That I'm like, this. I didn't like this book. I can't recommend
it. Did
you
just read the book?
Hmm?
Did you just read that book?
No. It's even better. You're going to be so happy. So I've been reading books that I'm like, I'm glad I read it. It was fun to read, but I'm not recommending it. Or it's a book that Greg just recommended. I'm not going to do that. I was trying to think of what I was going to recommend this week. Erica Tamposi, you and I have the exact same recommendation.
Yes!
In Recommendation Station.
Yes!
And for the same reasons. Those Who Wish Me Dead on HBO Max. It is like a 90s throwback movie. Angelina Jolie, the best. I haven't seen an Angelina Jolie movie
in ever.
A long, long time. It's hilarious that she's a firefighter at all.
And she's so hot. It's like, there's no way.
Like the father-son dynamic, or whatever, like the kid she's got to save. And I'm not spoiling anything. This is all like very easy. Like that's hilarious. Like the convoluted plot, the two hitmen, the two bad guys
are
great. I love them. And the movie is just, it's just dumb fun. You know exactly what you're getting. Like I was between watching this over the weekend or that new zombie movie, Army of the Dead.
Oh, I've heard good things. I haven't seen it.
So have I, but it's like 2.5 hours long and it's like they're trying to build a world. This is like 90 minutes, just rock and roll. It's cool. And that guy, John Bernthal, is that his name? John Bernthal? He was
the cop. Yeah.
The guy who plays the cop. He's great in it. I love him in anything he does.
His badass wife.
Yes. Every single character in the movie is like an awesome noir character. And it's just, they nailed the tone. Sometimes movies like that can be really bad, or sometimes they can be great. And I loved it. And I truly love that after giving you shit for 106 episodes of your recommendations, that we landed on the exact same. It is uncanny that we did that.
Yes.
So Eric and I both recommend Those Who Wish Me Dead. And Greg, again, How Beautiful We Were, one of the best books of the year, come end of the year. That's a unprecedented JRVP occurrence. And now, for even more unprecedented JRVP occurrences, we got a new sign-off. And we got two to choose from. We got Lil Debbie in the house to record. We got Greg's mom to record. She heard Greg's impression of her last week doing the sign-off and flipped out. Flew here. Flew across the country to do it herself. And we gave her two tries. I haven't heard either of these yet.
I
want you to play them both, and then we'll decide.
Okay.
Give me the first one. Debbie, get us out of here.
Whoa, Nelly Furtado, that's a spicy meatball. Is that okay, Greggy?
What was the last part she said?
She said, is that okay, Greggy?
Okay, that's going to be tough to beat. That's going to be tough to beat. She came hard. She clearly prepared. She did the vocal exercises beforehand. I love it. Play me option B.
Whoa, Nelly Furtado, that's a spicy meatball.
Okay, listen, I think they're both great. Thank you so much, Debbie, for doing this. But I'd be shocked if anyone is against using option A. Going through, is that okay, Greg?
Yeah, I think you're right. Although I do like the second one was more of a hard for Tata. Corrected herself for the second.
It was, but it's not about those little moments. It's about the whole shebang.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's about the elbows and the eyes. Erica, Get us out of here with the new Debbie sign off. That will be our sign off going forward until we can get Walker's crush on the air to do a sign off.
Whoa, Nelly Furtado, that's a spicy meatball. Is that okay, Gregory?